It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with May Brussel. For the past 14 years, May has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good evening. This is May Brussel. It's Dialogue Conspiracy number 316, and it's April the 9th, 1978. Last week, I talked about income tax time, the Treasury Department, the letter I wrote to the Internal Revenue in May of 1972 asking for a refund of my taxes because the Treasury Department, which includes the Internal Revenue, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, and the investigation of narcotics traffic and the organization Interpol, were part of assassination teams and intermingled the government agencies with worldwide narcotics traffic. And I wanted a refund because I felt that the money that I sent contributed to the assassination squads that were paid for by the worldwide narcotic traffic, and specifically certain persons in the United States. And then a month later, at the time of Watergate, there were these notorious Watergate arrests of men that worked for the exact Treasury Department that I had fingered. And I then learned more specifically the names of the agents. I had certain agents like Larry Shears, who told the story of trying to get Sonny Barger of the Hell's Angels, who was busy in narcotics traffic, to assist killing Eldridge Cleaver, and that the Treasury Department wanted to kill Cesar Chavez for the farm workers and for the CIA. And then, as I say, after Watergate arrests, a month later, we got to know the name of Eagle Crow, who worked in the Treasury Department, and E. Howard Hunt, and G. Gordon Liddy, and Tony Laswitz, and John Caulfield. And as I said last week, Caulfield had threatened to kill James McCord or silence him at the time of the Watergate arrests. Tony Laswitz was up at Chappaquiddick the night that Mary Jo Kopechne died. He was right on the island giving news accounts and was receiving $100,000 from Herbert Kalmbach, President Nixon's attorney, just a month earlier. And that mishap at Chappaquiddick made sure that Ted Kennedy didn't run for president of the United States after that girly party at Chappaquiddick. We had G. Gordon Liddy with his links to the Treasury Department and Interpol, working in the National Archives with Robert Mardian of the Justice Department, watching Nazi pictures of Adolf Hitler, quoting German and identifying with Adolf Hitler. And Liddy went out, he one time was going to kill Jeb Magruder because they simply mentioned take care of Magruder. The killing was called off, but we never did get an investigation of these people. And then E. Howard Hunt, of course, was involved in many ways that have never been investigated as a writer, whether he wrote the diaries of Lee Harvey Oswald or Arthur Bremer. He was supposed to go to Arthur Bremer's apartment the night that George Wallace was shot. And with Wallace shot, he was out of the running for the elections in 1972. He was shot in May 72. So all of these men, Eagle Crow, worked for the Transportation Department and the Treasury Department. They all worked with Operation Intercept, which was a narcotics operation. They worked with assassination teams everywhere that they crossed. There were lives threatened or people killed. And as I say, last week I went into my tax papers, and what I wanted from the Department of the Treasury was a refund, which, of course, I didn't get. So today I want to do a little more on the Ajax file, which has to do with the international narcotics traffickers and which, of course, links to these assassination teams in the United States. I do want to mention before I get into the Ajax file that We Magazine is on the stands now. I haven't seen a copy. I've gotten about 30 phone calls on it. There's an article by Paul Krasner on the mind of May Brussel. The article goes into my reasons for doing my research, the early news stories that I broke in advance of many other people in the country, conclusions I've made from 13, 14 years of research, my fears for the future. And if you want a good background story, I think it was a pretty good interview that Paul had with me, you can get We Magazine, and it will answer a lot of questions, maybe, on who is Mae Brussels, why is she doing this, what is she doing, and where does the research lead her. Also, there's an article in New West, a brief mention of a big lawsuit that's going to be coming up. It's a $450 million lawsuit by Charles Winnan against Rolling Stones, and it has to do with an article Paul Krasner wrote for Rolling Stones, making allegations about Charles Winnan, a man who was living on the Monterey Peninsula, a neighbor of mine. And New West says there were four sources for information on this story. One is Kenneth Ross, who told Paul Krasner certain pieces of information about Charles Winnan and then backed down and probably was wrong. Sue Atkins, who talked with Paul and then she denied what she had said. The third one was Louise James, and New West described her as not being a credible witness. And then the fourth is Mae Brussels. So there's a $450 million lawsuit coming up, and the primary witness is going to be Mae Brussels. The attorneys for Rolling Stones are the same law firm that represents the Rockefeller Combines. They're up in San Francisco. And the attorney for Charles Winnan is going to be none other than Melvin Belli. I really welcome meeting Melvin Belli in court. I've met him at a lecture and asked him questions about Jack Ruby because I know Belli works for the CIA, and I'm very anxious to meet them head-on in court. It'll be an interesting trial, and I think it'll be up in San Francisco around June if it isn't settled out of court. Next week on Dialogue Conspiracy, I'm going into details about Louise James and the mind control of Louise James and why she was washed out as a witness. And therefore, she cannot be presentable in court as supporting the allegations that she made at the time she made them. But now I want to get back to part two of the Treasury Department, because one of the listeners who takes Dialogue Conspiracy sent me a large file called the Ajax File. And as I said last week, the reprints of it at cost are $1.85 for copying it and postage. If you want the entire file in your hands that you can read and look up the references. And if you want more information on the links of our Treasury Department to the World Nazi Organizations and the World Syndicate of Narcotic Traffics, send $5 to Freedom Magazine. Freedom Magazine, 5930 Franklin Avenue, Hollywood, California. And you can get 10 issues for $5, and you'll get backup material on the role of our FBI and the CIA and the use of our intelligence community and our law enforcement agencies of organized crime and of the Corsican Mafia and the use of drug traffic to promote counterintelligence death squads and secret intelligence teams. The narcotics money is used for these death squads and is very effective. And this explains why so many witnesses to trials and assassinations and judges can be offed, because there are teams of assassins that can do this work using the organized crime syndicate drug traffic operation, protected, identical to Sam Giancana when he was called before Washington and was going to be arrested. He says, I work for the CIA, and then all charges are dropped. The Ajax File is a book, and I'll give you an analysis of it for those of you that don't send for it, but this is just as much as time allows, and I'm sure you'll want it. It's an analysis of Interpol, international police, and their failure to ever get any large international drug traffic. Interpol, international police, is an international organization. They never arrest or find international criminals or large crime syndicates. They pick up young Americans, U.S. servicemen arrested with small quantities of marijuana and cocaine, and they lock them up in jails around the world, and then they stay in there indefinitely, or the families give large ransoms to the various enforcement people, and it's a way of picking up thousands of dollars to get them out. They ransom them out. The General Accounting Office in 1976 gave a report on Interpol because our tax dollars go into it. We pay to belong. And they came up with absolutely no record of any international criminals that they found in 1976 in drug traffic. And as the Ajax File goes on to say, there's only three possibilities to examine. One, there were no major narcotics investigations at all. Two, Interpol is ineffective. Or three, they avoid the serious offenders. And of course, it's the allegation of the people that put this together through a lot of research, very carefully documented, that that is the fact. The background of Interpol I haven't given for a long time on Dialogue Conspiracy. I know in the last year, as I looked at the show Liz, so I'm going to describe what Interpol is. It was created in 1924 after World War I, just at the time that Germany was rearming for World War II. The Versailles Treaty was signed, but immediately Germany rearmed, and a man named Hitler was being promoted as a bulwark against communism, and the Western world realized that they didn't want communism in the Soviet Union, this huge giant of Russia, facing the Europe and the small countries with the possibility of dividing up the profits that were great, the oil profits, the mineral, labor, and so forth. So a group, a combine, set out an international police group that was made up of police chiefs of European countries that was to form a harassment team or crackdown on people that were socialists or leftists and take away their power. Now, that was important because the young communists had cell meetings in Russia and were able to overthrow the Tsar and the Tsar's family. But with a new police force, it would make it impossible for people to get together again and have revolutions in the various countries in Europe. The alleged purpose, of course, of the police was to cooperate finding criminals on the continent of Europe. But the definition of crimes was being a leftist or hungry or out of a job at the time of these depressions, or anti-war, or pro-left. And therefore, this group, Interpol, was set up. The headquarters were in Austria, and that's a country that was ripe for Hitler to take over. They welcomed him. By 1935, Hitler had been in power 2 years, and the offices of Interpol then moved to Germany. And there were regularly swastikas at the annual meetings, and the Nazi generals were in charge. One Nazi general was vice president. By 1938, the German police, who were considered the most efficient and effective police in the world, were managing Interpol. It was directed by, in quotes, the efficient Germans. J. Edgar Hoover from the United States went over where the swastikas were displayed, the Nazi generals were, and became the vice president of Interpol during the years when the Nazis were in control. July 20th, 1939 is when the FBI joined Interpol, 1939, and the American government sent over money and agents and became a part of the organization known as Interpol. In 1941, their offices were housed in Berlin. Meyer Heydrich and the top German officers who were in charge of the final solution of killing all Jews or gypsies and leftists and so forth, kept their list of genealogy of people to be exterminated, and this was housed in Berlin. In 1945, Germany collapsed, and the president of Interpol at that time was hung in Nuremberg for war crimes. But the list and the logs of people yet to be exterminated still existed, and it was kept in Austria. One important point, the value of these lists is such as the exhuming of Charlie Chaplin's body. I said various people, and I hadn't mentioned on the air before, that I believe the reason Chaplin's body was taken from that grave was that he was Jewish. His mother was Jewish. And this is a Nazi trick to desecrate the graves and cause torment to the families. And there was a cross left in the Presbyterian cemetery, and the body was gone. Nobody wants a ransom, but they just wanted to give terror and bring back this trait that the Germans had for terrorizing. And just this week in, I think it was Midnight Magazine, there was an article on why Charlie Chaplin's body remains were kidnapped, and it was the first published article I've seen that he was a Jew, his mother was a Jew, and that the people in Switzerland were violently anti-Semitic, and they began to get calls immediately after he was buried, take that Jew, that person out of our cemetery where these nice people are. And now it's being printed for the first time, a motive for taking his body. Well, the lists are very valuable because as Interpol works, and I know it works in conjunction with the Mormon banks, the data banks and genealogy that are becoming so popular now, they can find out back to the year 600, almost every single person on planet Earth. And Interpol began the system of the files extermination. In 1945, Germany collapsed, as I said before, where the president was hung. And Meyer Heydrich and Ernest Kaltenbrunner, who were the Gestapo chiefs, had organized Interpol. But the list remained. And then France took Interpol into their country. You remember France fell in 24 hours to the Nazis, and it had a tremendous desire to be German all along. And Interpol offices were then moved to France. Interpol is dominated now by the French people. French intelligence services have been working with Interpol, and they also have been working at the same time in narcotics traffic. The traffic for the past 20 years from Southeast Asia was coming in from the relationship of France to Saigon and the countries in Southeast Asia. Until 1946, France only paid dues to Interpol, but then they put the Interpol building in Paris, and it's right now a seven-story building in the Paris suburbs. The French government allows their national police to use the Interpol files, and our police files are sent there to France to these buildings. The first expose of Interpol that came public was in a book called Policeman's Lot by Harry Soderman. It was published in 1965 by Funk and Wagner, and Soderman died just at the time that the book was being edited. There's little wonder. It's like Mr. Blair's book on the oil conspiracy that was coming out last year, and he died just about a week or two before his book was available. So there were no talk shows and no promotion of the book. Well, Mr. Soderman was in on the beginning of the creation of Interpol. He collaborated with the Nazis. He knew about their files. And he knew about the files that were developed by the Nazi police. And many of them were used to blackmail people in the Third Reich. And he knew they had a list of forgers and counterfeiters. And they made passports and currency for people. And Mr. Soderman was writing this book at the time of his death. It was just being edited. The Nazi files of extermination, the people that are still living that weren't killed, ended up in the French hands. And in 1946, Mr. Soderman, he was alive then, and Florent Louage were invited to Paris to begin the new Interpol. What they called the new Interpol was to start all over. And they took over people and never questioned anybody or whether or not they still were Nazis or worked with the Nazis. 85% of the 150 personnel right now in Paris are French, and the French have allowed them to be outside of Paris, as I say, in this big building. Now, the French intelligence system that runs Interpol also has a separate group known as the SDECE. In French, it's Service, S, D, Documentation, D, Exterieur, E, Etude Contre-Espionage, Service, SDECE. And they have a counter-espionage team also called STECK, which are their assassination squads that are also financed through the narcotics traffic, the worldwide narcotics traffic. The SDECE, which we can compare to the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, the NSA, these initials, ran drugs, and the way they financed their operations was through the drug operations in Southeast Asia, because these assassination teams and these intelligence, counterintelligence teams, weren't funded with the approval of the French government or the French people. The book by Alfred McCoy, The Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia, is a big source for some of the Ajax file. It claims, in quotes, informed observers are convinced that the SDECE's top intelligence officers organized narcotic shipments to the United States of America to finance their dirty mission groups. They would sell all over the world, and America became a wide market, and this is where the increase of crime in the United States comes, and the muggings and the insanities and the dependence of people upon programs, what we call a welfare state. We hear Ronald Reagan and certain politicians running on this great welfare ticket, always attacking. We built this dependence by making people need narcotics, go to clinics, breaking drug habits, getting fixes, paying off policemen, and robbings and muggings to keep the habits going. The way the French financed their intelligence operations was to send narcotics into America and keep them going, and that funded their particular counterintelligence group. SAC, which was the Service d'Action Civique of the French intelligence, was useful to Charles de Gaulle to keep him alive at the time of the revolution in 1968. There were elements that wanted him to be killed, and these same elements that were attempting to kill Charles de Gaulle that he investigated were written up in the book Farewell America. They were the people behind the killing of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. De Gaulle used this group, this top intelligence advisor. He brought in Corsicans and French gangsters to counteract the equivalent of the defense intelligence in this country, and they broke up demonstrations and helped him. They were useful to him at the time. In the 1950s, France was involved in a very unpopular war in Southeast Asia, and the Ajax file goes into that, and the top intelligence advisors were short of funds. So they took over the narcotics traffic in France, and they had Operation X, which was the opium traffic. They had a hardcore of Corsican narcotics dealers who today are the top figures of international narcotics trade in the world. The USA followed, and we have connections of Madame Chenault and the Flying Tigers with Robert Vesco. I have an article here of the Flying Tigers supplying money for people in California alone, such as Senator John Tunney, Los Angeles Mayor Bradley, the former District Attorney D.A. Bush. And the important thing is that this Flying Tiger CIA narcotics money goes to people like D.A. Bush in Los Angeles, who prosecuted Sirhan Sirhan, or a man like Senator John Tunney, who would put down the conspiracy to kill John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, or deny that there was a conspiracy at Chappaquiddick. The use of this money or airplanes that the narcotics traffic brings in to pay various politicians. I have listed here the former supervisor in Los Angeles, Ernest Debs, John Ferrero, the city councilman, Representative Charles Wilson. These are just California politicians that were given money by Madame Chenault and the Flying Tigers. The Flying Tigers identified with narcotics traffic, and yet two or three of these men are responsible for the cover-up of parts of the assassinations in this country. As politicians, they keep quiet. So that not only do the narcotic teams do the assassinations, but it's possible that they're funding the very people that are stopping the investigations from ever getting off the ground. The movement of opium and heroin for profit was sanctioned all the time, according to the Ajax file, from the highest level of French intelligence. Then the United States got into the act of narcotics traffic. Colonel Edward Lansdale went to Indonesia in 1953 for a six-week tour. He found out that the French officers bought up the entire 53 opium harvest to fund their intelligence operations. Mr. Lansdale worked with Alan Dulles, E. Howard Hunt, and the whole team of Watergate defendants. Many of them, you know the names and the links, and the CIA and the law enforcement agencies in this country. Lansdale's name is known for his connections to high-up officials in this country and assassination teams. And he also became familiar that the French funded their assassination teams through buying up the opium harvest and selling it and exporting it. Then France expanded their drug market. Now, this is France who is housing. This country is housing Interpol that's supposed to crack the drug traffic. But this country opened up the drug traffic for the CIA. And the Ajax file has a good detail on this. It fits along with the gemstone file that many of you ordered, and I think you should get it for your collection of literature to see how many assassination teams later linked to the narcotics traffic and intelligence operations. The Ajax file says that France expanded the drug market. Corsicans at that time dominated the Saigon underworld when we went into Southeast Asia following France. They dominated the civil service system, the businesses, the black market, and the smuggling. And then it came through Marseille so that the French Indochina Corsican settlements were sending in gold bullion, paper currency, and then the CIA opened the door in Marseille for heroin traffic to be flown between Marseille and Saigon and back and forth. In 1945 and 46, the minute World War II was over, there were strikes in Marseille. The dock workers wanted more money. The politicians called it communism. They brought in our intelligence operations. Actually, we had not the formal CIA wasn't set up at that time. We had the OSS that then became the CIA. And they called all of these strikers who had low wages and wanted a higher income communists. The socialists and communists were thrown out of the city. And in its place were put these people that would continue the flow from Marseille to Saigon of the narcotics traffic. Marseille became an important international port in Europe. There was a time when the Marseille connection, the French connection, was named by Sam Peroff before the Senate hearings and linking Robert Vesco to Montreal, to Marseille, and mentioning Richard Nixon's brother. And what happened was that Peroff was blown, his cover was blown as being an informer, and the whole investigation never was curtailed, and it still continues today. In 1947, when the CIA was formed, it took over right from the OSS. They immediately sent agents to Marseille. They worked with the Corsican Syndicate, the links of the CIA to Lucky Luciano and in Italy, and Meyer Lansky, and many people in the narcotics traffic is becoming more open through many books and bibliographies that you can get on this subject. I can send you some, or you can get them to the library. But then we started giving them money and weapons, and the Corsicans began to work with the Central Intelligence Agency. And in cooperation, all communist support was assaulted, and the docks became part of the Corsican Syndicate. And unrestricted smuggling operation began. The first French heroin laboratory had been opened in 1951, but then when the CIA came in, there was no cracking down on this. And once in a while, there's a movie or a big arrest, but the raw opium was delivered through French intelligence. The Ajax file has a list of various people high up in the international government of France, president of the National Assembly, the French police, works with Interpol and the syndicate, John Bozy, head of the manpower and criminal ranks for de Gaulle, head of the French police, works with Interpol and the syndicate. They give the names of the various people that work both with Interpol and with the syndicate. The Ajax file is, as it explains, not a single group. It's made up of four small groups, Candide, Zadig, Micromegas, and Stewart. And that's their code name, with constant radio contact to Switzerland. They have 180 members at the time of the war. They now have 2,000 members. And certain members, like Jean Nepot, N-E-P-O-T, he was the Secretary General of Interpol. The officials of the narcotics traffic and the heroin traffic are also, and the French police, are also working with Interpol. And the purpose of the Ajax file is to show why we can't get narcotics arrests and why we can't stop the big people that are bringing in the drugs and the crime that follows afterwards. Many people, such as Nepot, got papers showing that they never collaborated with the Nazis. They were selling papers, memberships of resistance groups after the war, diploma mills, and you could buy a membership showing that you have a certificate you are anti-Nazi. And yet the very people that are working with the French police are working with the drug programs, and they also worked with the purification committee of getting rid of certain people. The summary of the Ajax file claims that for three decades, Interpol has concentrated on narcotics. The officials in South America are responsible for cocaine traffic in the United States. One person, member Christian David, a former SDEC agent from France, was one of the moving forces of American drug traffic and the Corsican Syndicate. He was arrested in 1972. The French Syndicate dominates the Marseille Golden Triangle heroin. The French Syndicate also works with Interpol, international police, for the purposes of catching the little guy and letting the large dealers get away. Another use of Interpol, according to the Ajax file, to the syndicate is very easy to see. When SDECE moves drugs, they use their counterintelligence to protect their shipments. Their police protect the shipments. But then they also have files from over 100 nations, so they know who is caught and who's in embarrassing positions, and they can use it for blackmail. And it says Interpol is one cog in a massive international machinery that is profiting from the transporting of narcotics. And the problem is that you get a neo-Nazi group that is connected, say, to the Nazis in America. I mean, the real Nazis in the archives, such as G. Gordon Liddy and E. Howard Hunt and the people that have worked with the Nazis, Richard Helms, and you give them the power to know who's dealing the drugs and who isn't, and you give them the profit of the drug traffic to continue their assassination teams. You have all the funding you need for wiping people out, wiping witnesses out, silencing witnesses, silencing judges, as I say, and continuing a reign of terror all over the world in every country, and holding the narcotics in their hands to continue the sales and profits. Next week on Dialogue Conspiracy, we will go into Operation Mind Control, the book by Mr. Bowart, and what it does to a witness like Louise James, who will not be credible at the Rolling Stones trial. And until then, keep your minds clear and take care. Mae Brussel, this is Mae Brussel. I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussel.